Services is open. Before we get started, Michelle, I'm going to need, well, actually everybody's lining up to sign up to testify on things. The chair is going to use great discretion in how many people testify on these bills today. We have, I think, 9 bills today. All of them are bills that we, most of them are bills we've heard before and have taken testimony on before. And I can guarantee you we will not have time to get through this if we've got 15, 20 people signed up on each bill again. So please, nobody be offended if the committee is ready to move on a bill and I don't call you up. Part of the reason for that, you know, today is the last day for Senate committees to take action on Senate bills. So if one of your bills does not get up before 4:45 today, the bill is gone. So keep that in mind as people are up here testifying as well. Michelle, I could use all of the sign-up sheets so that I could see what we have coming down the pike. And I'm going to go through quickly now the order that I'm going to take the bills in today so that you can plan accordingly. The first bill up will be Senate Bill 576. Cindy Roberts, you will be up first on that, so you can take the table if you'd like, if you're in the room. Next will be Senate Bill 1011. House Bill 2051 will not be up today. Senate Bill 665 will be next. Then Senate Bill 737. Then Senate Bill 883. Then Senate Bill 239. Then Senate Bill 683. And then Senate Bill 1044. Everybody getting the message on the schedule for today?
Did you call that one?
No, I missed one. And look, and out of all that, I missed one. And then somewhere in the last two there will be Senate Bill 98. The other is that the amendments, because today is the last day, amendments have been flying in to various members' offices and to the committee administrator's office. Some of the amendments were left, and we don't even know who they came from. And so as these bills come up, we've done our best to sort through these amendments and try and pick the ones that the committee would likely be discussing and moving on. But if the committee seems to be missing an amendment or moving on one that you think was the wrong one, raise your hand or something so that we can at least get that clarified. Okay. Fair enough.
Thank you.
And for the committee, I don't know if some of you have amendments that you'll want to discuss as bills come up. It would be helpful to me, just for time planning, to know if you have a series of amendments or one that you want more discussion on than I might be anticipating, and it would be good for you to let me know. And with that, I am going to open a work session on Senate Bill 576, though we're going to take a little bit of testimony from Cindy Roberts. Sue, give us a very quick reintroduction to the bill.
Senate Bill 576 relates to high-performance building standards for energy efficiency. I believe there is a -4 and a -6 amendment up for discussion.
Committee, if you remember, the debate on this bill that raged on for a month here was whether or not we were going to adopt a LEEDS standard or a Green Globe standard or neither or both. And there has been some discussion between the various stakeholders on that, and I don't know if there's a consensus, but there is an amendment to propose, right?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Cindy Robert, and I'm proud to represent the American Institute of Architects. Hear from you solely for the purpose of questions, not to take up any of your time, as my acting president of AIA, John Blumenthal. Yes, indeed, the -4s are a compromise between the LEED folks and the Green Globe folks. There are the compromise entails no labels, no names, no national standard. But the compromise does not in any way change or compromise the ability of the state to be a trailblazer when it comes to sustainability in design and construction of its public buildings. You will notice that what we've done in this is simply left to the Department of Energy to make the decision as to what standard it will use at different points in time. And then we list on section 2A through H, the things that standard that they shall adopt shall include. And the rest of the bill is very much what it was in the last round, and I don't think there were any arguments as to the importance of building green. I think it was just to what standard we use. So we have left the standard name out.
And while I was reading here, you clarified that the Department of Energy will have some rulemaking authority with regard to that.
Mr. Chair, the Department of Energy will have to select rules by the end, or adopt a standard, so they'll have to do rules right away, prior to January 1st of 2008.
And whose birthday is it today?
Today is Claire Merrill Roberts' birthday.
My daughter,
she's 8, and she didn't want to come because it scared her, and she thought it'd be more fun to go to school and get a pencil.
Right.
That's good.
That was a tough choice, I'd say.
Good.
And I thank you, Mr. Chair, for making arrangements on her behalf. I'm sure she'll be happy to spend more time at Sweet Tomatoes.
So everybody in the room knows when we have very important state business and a crowded schedule, the thing that bumps you to the top of the list is your daughter's birthday.
Thank you.
All right. Do you have anything to add?
Question. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm John Blumenthal from Portland, president-elect of AIA Oregon. I believe the amendments that are before you actually provide a good bill from our initial standpoint and an improvement from the standpoint of allowing flexibility in terms of the long-term application of the bill.
Got it. Thank you. Questions? Senator Beyer?
Department of Energy?
What's that?
Can I ask the Department of Energy a couple
questions? Yeah, I'm going to bring them up right now. Betty, are you in? Betty Merrill, you're in the room? Thank you, Ms. Merrill. Senator Beyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, at the first hearing, there was seemed to be some confusion on the executive branch. Some testified for, some testified against. Has that been all cleared up?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. As we move forward with this, is it the intent of the department to gain more understanding about both these competing standards and before they adopt one or the other and make sure that they get all the information available on both?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, yes, the bill actually has some criteria for selecting a standard, and we will review what's available and look at them open-mindedly and make some decisions.
And very important that you won't be biased one toward the other before you start and look at both of them neutrally, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, that's correct.
Thank you. And when you look at the issue of using wood for buildings, would there be any bias against locally produced wood?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, actually in the -4 amendments, there's a line that encourages the use of products harvested, created, or mined in Oregon.
Thank you very much.
Is that it?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Is there somebody in the room that submitted -6 amendments related to affordable housing? Mr. Rainey, come on up. Mr. Roberts, are you still here?
Yes.
What was the number of your -?
-4.
Thank you. Mr. Rainey, why don't you tell us about your -?
Thanks, Chair Ivaki and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Paul Rainey. I'm here today on behalf of the Association of Oregon Housing Authorities. It's our understanding the intent of Senate Bill 576 is to require higher performance building standards for large facility projects, not to impact the development or rehabilitation of affordable housing. As currently drafted, this legislation would require local housing authorities, defined in statute as public corporations, to comply with the higher architectural standards. And while there is an exemption for the rest of the affordable housing developers, community development corporations, and for-profit corporations. So our intent was simply to ensure, if the policy was to exempt residential affordable housing, to make sure all developers of residential affordable housing are exempt. And that's what this -6 does.
Okay. Committee, we have not had much discussion on this particular issue, and the -- has just came in. So if you
this
don't understand...
Another bill.
What? So if you have questions of these two regarded to that affordable housing exemption, now's the time to ask them.
Seeing none. Okay, thank you both.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, did you want to add something?
John Fletcher, quickly. John Fletcher with the Department of Oregon Housing Community Services. And we concur with the housing authorities in saying that the dash fours, as worded, would impact affordable housing, and so that's why we have the dash sixes. If you would like to not have a loss of units of affordable housing with the standards you're creating, the dash sixes would take care of that.
Okay. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
A nod from the architects. They support. We don't support the dash sixes.
Senator Atkinson has a question with regard to the architects. Cindy Roberts, would you come back up, please, briefly?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, Cindy Robert with the American Institute of Architects. Policy-wise, Senator, I believe that all green buildings, all public buildings should be built to the green standard. And more than anything, I would believe that if we were concerned about the long-term affordability of the housing, we would want it to have low energy costs. That being said, as our policy, it is my understanding that through this bill, I have taken the two competing forces for affordable housing in our state and exempted one by the nature of who they are and included the other by the nature of the definition public body. And it is not my intent to put anybody at a market disadvantage or advantage over someone else. So as I told the housing authority folks, this is not my intent. And I would leave it up to you to decide if it was where the seesaw is. Is it more important to make affordable housing do this, or is it more important to make sure that we don't mess up the economic marketplace?
Okay, thank you very much. Committee, we're in work session, and why don't we start with a motion and then discussion on the dash fours.
And Mr. Chair, I'd move the dash fours.
Senator Atkinson moves the dash fours in the Senate Bill 576. Committee, is there any discussion? Seeing none, are there any objections? Seeing none, the dash fours are adopted. Let's move it. Why don't you give me a motion on a dash six, and we'll have a discussion, and then we'll decide what to do with it.
Mr. Chair, I'd give you a motion on the dash sixes. To Senate Bill 576.
There's a motion to adopt the dash sixes. Is there any discussion on the dash sixes? Part of the reason I went ahead and did the motion here is because there doesn't seem to be objection from the other side. I wanted to give the committee a chance to have a full discussion about it. We haven't had a lot of time to hear from all sides on this particular issue. I think that there have been some concerns raised outside of this hearing about whether it might in some way impact prevailing wage laws. We don't have an answer on that yet. I only know that the issue was raised. And certainly there is some concern that if we were to add these, that it might be beneficial to affordable housing in certain areas. But is there any reason for further discussion from the committee?
Mr. Chair, after all the heartache we've gone through to get this bill to this point, I wouldn't support the dash sixes.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if I really fully appreciate what the dash sixes would actually do. I don't know if I really heard that just now in the presentation. It seems to me that we've got consensus on the dash fours, and it would seem best maybe to move the bill as with the dash fours and let the House side look at the dash sixes as once it can be more vetted out. And based on what I'm hearing, the chair says it doesn't sound like you've been maybe fully briefed or got questions answered that you may have as well. So,
Mr. Chair,
just for discussion, I would support the dash sixes just because I don't think they hurt the bill. I don't think they hurt the compromise of reaching the dash four, and I think if it's a potential to keep affordable housing affordable, it's a good goal. And so I would support the dash sixes.
Okay, any further discussion?
Well, as you said, old brother, we're out there. I'm with you guys.
we'll see who's with who. Matt, would you call the roll on the dash sixes?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
No, I'm not doing a
impersonation of the House right now.
Oh, what the heck. I'll say aye.
No.
Well, I think we're okay. It's my
misunderstanding. No.
Aye, and the dash sixes are adopted. And could I have a motion on the bill, please?
Mr. Chair, even though I just voted on the dash sixes, I would still like to move Senate Bill 576 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson moves 576 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? With as amended with both dashes.
Both dashes?
Dash fours, dash sixes, as amended. No further discussion. Are there any objections? And seeing none, the motion carries. And Senator Beyer, would you like to carry this one?
I think Senator Atkinson would be upset if he didn't carry it.
Senator Atkinson will carry 576.
Actually,
this is the lead thing. That's what we should do. And with that, I will close the work session on 576, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1011. And Sue, would you give us a very brief rundown on 1011?
Senate Bill 1011 authorizes counties and metropolitan service districts to create a process to designate rural reserves and urban reserves. There's a dash 5 amendment that I think is up for consideration.
You want to go very quickly over with the dash 5? Actually, Mr. Tucker, you want to do the dash 5. Just do them very briefly since we've been this route once before.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Randy Tucker, Metro Legislative Affairs Manager. The only difference between the dash 3s, which I presented last time and which you've got a sheet in your packets that gives you a summary of the dash 3s, and the dash 5s is, I'm not looking at them, but I believe it's page 3, line 19, where there is now a period after the word simultaneously. There was another half a sentence there that we deleted. The city of Hillsborough testified to that in the last hearing on Tuesday. It was just extra language that had been added in the last draft by LC that we felt created more ambiguity than clarity. And so we just deleted a half a sentence. That's the only difference between the dash 3 and the dash 5s.
And the city concurred with that, correct?
That's correct. Okay. Actually, I was supposed to have presented it to you, and I forgot, and the city came up and presented it.
That's okay. Thank you very much. We are in work set. Are there any questions? Mr. Tucker, while he's here. Nope. Thank you very much. If I could have a motion on the dash 5s.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the dash 5s into Senate Bill 1011.
Thank you. Senator Bates moves dash 5s in Senate Bill 1011. Is there any discussion?
Chair,
Senator Beyer.
I won't support the motion to move dash 5s. I think that moves into the bill. I won't support the bill. I have an alternative that I think we heard the other day, dash 4s, and I would have preferred a motion on that.
I'm happy to hear your dash 4s as soon as we dispose of this, if you'd like.
Well, they kind of, it's kind of an either-or type of arrangement here.
All right. Is there any further discussion on the dash 5s? Seeing none, are there any objections to the dash 5s?
Yes.
Senator Beyer, with that, yes. With that, the motion carries. The dash 5s are adopted, and could I have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, do we need a motion for the dash 3s now? Or that, or does the dash 5s?
The dash 5s replace the 3s.
The 5s are replacing the 3s. Yeah. Okay. Mr. Chair, I'd move that Senate Bill 1011 with the dash 5 amendments be moved to the Senate floor.
Thank you. Senator Bates moves Senate Bill 1011.
With a due pass recommendation.
The due pass recommendation.
As amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer.
The differences are very subtle between the dash 3s and 4s, but as we heard in the last meeting, the 4s and 5s now, but the last meeting, there is some prime development land just outside the urban growth boundary that will be excluded and not allowed to be developed with the dash 5, and that is a mistake.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, would you allow Mr. Michael Jordan, if he's present, to come up just for a moment? I'd like to ask him a question or two, if possible. Do we have time to do that?
Well, we don't have time to do that, but if it's important, let's make it very quick, okay?
Very quickly, if he's still
Jordan,
present.
Mr. Jordan, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Jordan, thank you, Mr. Chair. We're going to do this very quickly because we haven't got a lot of time today. First, I appreciate you taking the time to come down here today. My day started pretty well. At about 8 o'clock, it went downhill very quickly over this issue.
Mine too, sir.
Okay, I'm sure we share for different reasons. We're not going to hear 2051 today. We are hearing this bill today, and we're obviously going to move it forward, I hope. What kind of assurances can you give us that those areas that are possibly going to be brought into the Urban Growth Fund will be given a fair hearing when they've already done their work and they've done their preparation, they're ready to come in, but this is what this thing's all about, is who's going to be getting in, who's not going to be getting in, and what preparation has to be done. Can you give us some assurances that everyone's going to have a fair shake in this thing in very simple terms?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, I'll do the best I can, and very, very briefly. There are multiple areas around here.
Just give us your name.
I'm sorry. My name's Mike Jordan. I'm Chief Operating Officer at Metro. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bates, there are multiple areas around the urban growth boundary that have done years of work preparing to be brought in to the boundary over time. The coalition of folks who have come together around both House Bill 2051 and Senate Bill 1011 have agreed numerous times that to try and segregate particular areas around the urban growth boundary and not consider them collectively over the next 2 years, both in the urban reserve and rural reserve context and the movement of the urban growth boundary within that discussion, it would not be prudent to set any one area aside vis-a-vis other areas. I can assure you that within the next few days, I'll be trying to convene a meeting with the leadership at Metro and probably others who have been involved in the coalition developing these bills and with the particular parties involved that we've spoken to today at length to try and resolve these issues to the satisfaction of everybody. And so I'll commit to you that I will convene that discussion.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and I appreciate that. I've had conflicting reports today, conflicting testimony, conflicting lobbyists, and it's been a very difficult thing. I don't like to be in a position of opposing legislation that I think it has some real good in it, and so I'm just hoping we can work this thing out very quickly. You know, there's some other questions involved in this that I have in the back of my mind. I'll give you an example of kind of things that worry me. Mm-hmm. We're going to build a new hospital for the mentally ill here in Salem, a very large facility, mm-hmm. multi-million dollar facility. People that I know who are psychiatrists and workers in that field think the best location for it is in the metro area. That's where most of the patients come from. They were blocked from going there because there's no land they could use that was appropriate for that building. And so they had to keep the building here in Salem. Now, that may not relate directly what your issues are, but it does relate. And I'm, you know, almost a country boy from Ashland here. I don't understand why we're building facilities in the wrong part of the state based on land use availability. So that's, I'm asking for an answer there. So those are the kind of issues that come in my mind and I worry about, and I'm not sure which way we should go on these things. So if you can come up with a consensus in the next few days, I would greatly appreciate that.
But not necessarily now, thank you. And if the country boy has a long question next time, why don't you save that one, okay?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Byron.
Thank you. You know, I appreciate the commissioner's response and his stand, but, you know, the dash fours do not specifically say a single piece of property, even though that was testified to. The dash fours say that the reserves, your rural reserves, should not include land that is designated by the Land Conservation Development Commission as prime industrial land. So here we are. We're turning down an amendment to a bill that says that when you're considering rural reserves, you should not consider prime industrial land as designated by our Land Conservation Development Commission. How is that inconsistent with the intent of the bill?
I assume it's a rhetorical question.
It's a statement to my colleagues before they vote on the bill to encourage them to vote no so we can then make a motion to put the correct amendment into the bill and then move it forward.
Well, and I would, and I don't want to slight your comment because I think anybody who makes a comment in a work session like this, the committee ought to consider the comment. But we do need to keep moving. So considering that comment and all the others, is there any further discussion? If not, let's be clear. We have the dash fives in front of us. Matt, would you call the roll on the dash fives?
Mr. Chair, I believe those were already adopted.
Oh, did we get the give me a motion on the bill then?
I think that's already been done too.
I don't think we voted on the bill.
No, we didn't vote on the bill. We have a motion. We have the motion in front of the committee for the
motion
dash.
The motion is to send 1011 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation as amended with the dash five amendments. Thank you, committee. And with that, Matt, would you call the roll?
No.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Aye. And with that, the motion carries, and the chair will carry the bill. And with that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 1011. And I will open a work session on Senate Bill 665. Remind us what it is, Sue, and then we've got an amendment.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 665 expands development allowed in conjunction with Speedway Destination Site to include permanent housing units. There is an amendment, a dash 2, that would delete Section 5, which relates to exempting these from the Land Use Board of Appeals process.
That Section 5 is the last section of the bill. It did that, and it also, I think, adjusted some other parts of the appeals process. There was great concern over manipulating the judicial branch in that manner, so that entire section has been deleted.
Dash 4.
That was a dash.
Two.
One work session.
Dash 2.
That was a dash 2. Could I have a motion on the dash 2?
Mr. Chair, I would move the dash 2 amendment to 665.
Senator Atkinson moves the dash 2 amendments into 665. Any discussion? Seeing none, are there any objections? The dash 2s are adopted, and could I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 665 as amended to the floor with a do pass Dukes of Hazzard recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Atkins. Move Senate Bill 665 to the floor as amended with a do pass recommendation. Discussion.
Only discussion I have, Mr. Chair, is when that first NASCAR race is over there, Senator Nelson better have a ticket for me.
All right.
Ringo and I are driving.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Pazansky.
Let's stay with the comments I made this morning based on what is now being expanded from what it was voted on 2 years ago into a destination-style resort. That's going to be really for not as an enhancement is the way I look at it for the operation and maintenance and of the Speedway. I will not be able to support it at this time.
Matt, could you call the roll, please?
Senator Brzezinski?
No.
Senator Atkinson?
Yes.
Senator Bates?
Yes.
Senator Meyer?
Aye.
Senator Buck?
No. And with that, the motion carries, and Senator Nelson will carry the bill on the floor. So I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 665. And I will open a work session on Senate Bill 737. Is Senator Walker in the room? Sorry we kept you waiting. Glad you're here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. You should have the Dash 8 amendment. As I indicated when I was here testifying the other day, a lot of this is about semantics.
Before you get started, I'm only going to take testimony from you and Ralph Saperstein, who didn't get a chance next time, last time.
All right. I have both of these gentlemen here if you have questions.
Okay.
Then they can ditch the table when we're done. Okay. What you'll see in the Dash 8 that's different from the Dash 5s that you saw the other day is that we simply declare an emergency. We've added that change. At the bottom of page 1 of the Dash 8, we also changed, added the words, or a major source water pollution control facility permit. We've also changed the dates. Remember in my last discussion with you, we needed to stretch the dates out to minimize the fiscal and allow DEQ to get the program up and running and for the folks who are paying for this program to get it started. So the first date change is on line 10 on page 2. That's now 2010. The second date change is on page 3, line 11. That's now 2009. On line 23, it is now 2011, and we added the word each permittee to make sure that we didn't include others who didn't want to be. And also, we changed a number of references at the request of DEQ. On line 29 on page 3, that now reads Environmental Quality Commission, and you'll see that reflected throughout the document, so it minimizes the effort that DEQ has to make. We also made some semantic changes on page 4, lines 9 through 12, that don't amount to much, just semantic changes. Again, on line 29, another semantic change. Same with page 5, lines 1 through 3, and then you'll see some of the other changes. And finally, for Senator George's benefit, on lines 28 through 29 on page 5 of the amendment, we added the fact that monies may be credited to the account from any public or private source. So that if any good Oregonian, or non-Oregonian for that matter, would like to contribute to the effort of the Department of Environmental Quality on cleaning up Oregon's waterways, they may do so.
Thank you. Once again, no checkbooks were coming out in back of you, but thank you for making the comment. Committee, are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you both, all three of you, very much. Ralph Saperstein, are you in the room?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Ralph Saperstein. I'm here representing the Oregon Water Quality Coalition. The coalition is a diverse group of business.
I'm going to give you about 60 seconds.
Oh.
So go to the end of the page and give your conclusion.
Okay, well, we are neutral on 737. Most of our members are not part of the bill. It's the cities and the environmentalists have crafted a compromise, and so we are neutral on their ability to go try this new program for PET reduction.
All right, good. Committee, any questions of Mr. Saperstein since he's up here? All right, seeing none, thank you very much. I need a motion on the dash 8s.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 8s in Senate Bill 737.
Senator Przanski moves the dash 8s into Senate Bill 37. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash 8s are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 737 as amended by the dash 8s to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Senator Przanski moves Senate Bill 737 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer.
I will not object to the motion of the bill going to Ways and Means. If the bill gets to the floor, I will likely be voting against it. The bill is another way to tax residents in cities because there is a provision in it that the DEQ can charge the cities, and the cities will have to charge the residents to do this study.
Okay. Committee, any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. Ways and Means, and with that I will close the work session on Senate Bill 737, and we will open up a public hearing on 883.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 883 allows imposition of civil penalties not to exceed $10,000 if violation of pesticide application, sale, or labeling laws resulting from gross negligence or willful misconduct. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage.
Lisa Hansen and Chris Kirby, why don't you come up first? Senator Farioli, if you are within earshot, I think this is the bill you wanted to be here for. Come on down.
For the record, I'm Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Department of Ag, and I have with me Chris Kirby, the Administrator of our Pesticides Division. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is not an ODA-sponsored bill. However, we support this bill. It's an initiative by the industry to be proactive in response to a recent set of investigations that took place in eastern Oregon, where we had situations with willful and negligent misuse of a pesticide product. We believe having some additional civil penalty authority in the pesticide program will provide additional disincentive for people to violate the pesticide law. And with that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Committee, any questions of the department? Seeing none, did you have anything to add?
No, sir. For the record, I'm Chris Kirby, Administrator of the Pesticides Division. I'm just here to answer any questions you might have.
Okay.
He's a smart one.
And I think they have none, so thank you both very much. Terry Witt, Barry Bushu.
Bushu. Like, bless you.
Senator Farioli is here, Mr. Chair.
Gentlemen, if you wouldn't mind waiting one moment. Senator Farioli came in. I didn't see him come in on the side. Thank you both. Senator, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ted Farioli. Represent District 30. All are part of 12 counties, 34,000 square miles, some of which is in a different time zone.
explains a lot.
This bill, Senate Bill 883, is sponsored by myself and Representative Butler, supported by the Oregonians for Food and Shelter, the Seed Council, the Farm Bureau Federation, Wheat Growers League, Oregon Forest Industries Council, and the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. You might think it odd that those organizations, which all are integral to agriculture, would step up to the plate and ask you to authorize the imposition of civil penalties not to exceed $10,000 for violation of pesticide applications. But what this results from is an off-label use of pesticide on a food crop. And Mr. Chairman, I have to tell you, it was done knowingly. It was done intentionally. It was done in a mechanism that jeopardized the confidence of consumers across the country in the food supply. And Oregon must stand up for the safest, most abundant, most available, least expensive food supply on Earth. And that's what our growers provide. We grow great onions and great potatoes and great tree fruits and fabulous row crops. And we want a clear message to be sent forth from the legislature that if you use a pesticide or an herbicide or any other crop medicine, that it must be done according to the label. It must be done by a licensed applicator. And it must be done in accordance with the laws and the rules set forth by the Department of Agriculture. And if you step across that line, you're going to pay the price. And the price in this case is $10,000 per incident. So, Mr. Chairman, I hope you will look with favor on the bill and other members of the committee. It has been developed in cooperation with agriculture and the Department of Agriculture. And that, Mr. Chairman, is the sum total of my testimony.
Committee, any questions of our colleague? Seeing none, Senator, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And if we can switch seats again, Terry Witt, Barry Bushu, actually, and Jeff Stone, come on up. All three of you have signed the form that you're in favor of the bill. We're going to move the bill, so don't feel to talk at length, but we do want to get your comments.
Thank you, Chair Vaki and members of the committee. The testimony that is being passed out, I basically highlighted two sentences on it because that really sums up where we're at on this bill. Obviously, we hope it will be a deterrent and not have to be a hammer. We hope there won't be any intentional misuses in the future. But I know there was some concern over the size of the increased penalty, that $10,000 may not have been enough. And I just want to comment that those growers who were penalized about $16,000 for multiple counts, had this been in effect, that penalty would have been closer to $100,000. So it would be a very significant penalty for those who choose to break the law. Thank you.
Mr. Witt.
Thank you, Chair Abaki and members of the committee. My name is Barry Bushu. I farm here at Gresham, Oregon. I'm also the president of the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I won't add much. I think it's unfortunate that a handful of growers made a poor choice in using a product off-label in order to protect their crop. In the long run, no one wins when that happens, and I can in no way condone or support their choices. I will add, however, that the ever-burdensome and costly regulatory process has severely limited the availability of new generation, effective, timely, and more specific products, especially for the specialty crop industry. It is inherent on us all to use the label and ensure that it remains the law. This industry bill is a proactive choice to increase the fines and to ensure the use of these continued safe and effective tools. The proposed fines are consistent with other agency regulations and will create an extremely effective deterrent for the deliberate misuse of a labeled product. I urge you to support this bill as written.
Thank you, Mr. Stone.
Mr. Chair, Jeff Stone, Director of Government Relations for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. Good bill. Should pass. We support it.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. I'll close.
I have a quick question.
Oh, we have a question. Senator Atkinson.
Anyone can answer two quick questions. One, Senator Bates and I were to make a comment on where does the money go. And number two, is the bill retroactive?
Second question first, is it retroactive? No, it is not. First question, it will go into the pesticide program within the Department of Agriculture.
And I see Ms. Hansen nodding her head in agreement back there. All right, thank you. With that, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 883, open a work session on Senate Bill 883.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 883.
Senator Atkinson.
Floor with a due pass recommendation.
Atkinson moves Senate Bill 883 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator,
I actually have some concerns. I'm going to support the bill, but as you know, this committee had a whole bunch of our time burned up by the Board of Geology going after one person. If that was a matter of my opinion, that's my opinion, but we had that debate. And one of the things that made me a little upset the first time I heard about this bill was whether or not it was retroactive to a group of people who are trying to compete in a very increasingly difficult market, and certainly our state does not do enough to reach out to Malheur County and their community. So I could wax poetic for a long time, but I had some concerns about it. But I will support the bill, even with the concerns.
And I would only add, I think it's a good tool for the department, and appreciate Senator Ferriola bringing the bill forward. Are there any objections? Seeing none. So ordered, Senator Ferrioli will carry the bill on the floor, and that will close the work session on Senate Bill 883. And we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 239. And Ms. Koba.
I'll say a word.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 239 eliminates certain land use regulations relating to agricultural quarantines and embargoes and to animal and plant disease control from the list of land use regulations for which an owner may claim compensation because land use regulations restrict use of private real property or reduces fair market value of private real property, declares an emergency effective on passage.
Welcome, Ms. Koba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Katie Koba, Director of the Department of Agriculture. You have before you what I believe is a very straightforward bill. Senate Bill 239 would clearly exempt certain land use regulations that we have in our agency from Measure 37. This arose when Measure 37 first passed, and we asked the Attorney General's office for clarification around some of our authority in dealing with quarantines, establishing control districts, dealing with invasive pests and diseases, and whether those items fall within the public safety health provision of exemption from Measure 37, and the Attorney General's office did not believe that they automatically fall under that section, recommended that we clearly exempt those items from Measure 37. These types of regulations are not commonly recognized as land use regulations. They are aimed more at protecting the health and welfare of the agricultural industry that can against conditions that can occur on a single property or a section of property but could spread and have an impact either on larger segments of the industry, whether that be plants or animals. Also included in this is right to farm. Within the bill, we are focusing specifically on Section 1, Sub E, and you see there a list of ORSs that are then exempted from Measure 37. So in your testimony is the actual written what those ORSs are and what they refer to. ORS 596 is our disease control for animal health and establishes our authority to put in place quarantines for disease control if we need to. This would be around foot and mouth disease, avian influenza, Newcastle disease are example of those kinds of quarantines. ORS 561 deals with our plant disease and invasive species statutory authority. Examples here where we currently are working include sudden oak death, or other places where we have to quarantine infected material, Dutch elm disease, apple maggot, Japanese beetle, those kinds of things. Then ORS 30.930 through 30.947 is the right to farm statutes, and that would include noise, for example, cannons that go off in vineyards or blueberry orchards to keep birds away, barking associated with guard dogs, etc. And then at the end of the testimony, you see the specific listing of the other statutes and what they refer to. We had this bill up last session, and there was a question last session to clearly make sure that our authority around water quality and implementing our agricultural water quality control statute was not included in this bill. It is not included in this bill. I just wanted to make that clear for the record.
Very good. Committee, any questions? Seeing none, thank you both very much. Larry Quackenbush and Scott Ashcombe. Mr. Witt and Mr. Stone, you're both down as being in favor of the bill. We'll just leave that on the record, okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Scott Ashcombe with the Oregon Agricultural Alliance. I'll just say that if there's one piece of legislation that agriculture in the state of Oregon really needs, it's to have the right to farm bill and the other very, very important programs in the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Forestry, I might say, might add spruce budworm control, gypsy moth control, and all of these pesty little insect control laws, have them exempted from the Measure 37. We don't believe that the people who drafted Measure 37 really intended that they be included, and we think they're very eligible for an exception from Measure 37 and support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Ivaki, and for the record, my name is Lanny Quackenbush with the Oregon Department of Forestry. First off, I apologize for my casual attire. I was on grand jury this morning and didn't expect to get down here, but I am pleased to appear and add my support to Senate Bill 239. This proposal also includes our integrated pest management authority, very similar to the Department of Agriculture. And probably more importantly to us is that our agency is cooperating with Department of Agriculture in the sudden oak death that was already mentioned. And we want to make sure that those types of projects can be taken forward expeditiously.
Very good. Thank you both for your testimony. It's helpful to the committee. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 239 and open a work session on Senate Bill 239. If I could have a motion.
Mr. Chair, move Senate Bill 239 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson. Move Senate Bill 239 to the Senate floor with due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
I really want to see a vineyard cannon demo.
Vineyard cannon demo. I'm sure that can be arranged.
I have one in my county.
Do you?
Yep.
I don't know what end of the cannon we're going to put you on, but I think we can take care of that. Are there any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries. Senator Beyer, will you carry the bill on the floor?
Sure.
Thank you. With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 239, and we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 683. Stephen Kafori and Amy Code, if you could come up while Sue is reading the bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 683 reduces size of identifying hydraulic unit to be used when reporting pesticide use from a third level hydrologic unit to a fourth level hydrologic unit. Applies to reporting data on or after the effective date of the Act. There is a dash one amendment that I believe Mr. Kafori can speak to.
Welcome, Mr. Kafori.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Kafori. I'm here today representing Northwest Coalition for Alternatives to Pesticides. I want to thank you, Senator Vakian, for introducing this bill. We are very supportive of it and like to give some testimony. I'd like to introduce Amy Code from NCAP.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Amy Code. I work at the Northwest Coalition for Alternatives to Pesticides. Basically, what I want to do today is I want to tell you that this is a reasonable bill, and it is a very valuable bill. and I'll be very brief. If you want the details, you can ask me questions. It's valuable because, for a lot of reasons, but it's going to, by shifting from Hydrologic Unit Code 3 to 4, drinking water providers are going to have a lot more valuable information. Right now, pesticide use is reported by basins. It's going to shrink to watersheds. That's going to give drinking water providers exact information about what pesticides are applied in the very waters that our drinking water comes from. The program is also very reasonable. Reasonable for a lot of reasons. The vast majority of people that are going that report for this program are going to have absolutely no impact by this shift. You weigh that against the significant benefit to the usability of this data by this shift. It's also a very reasonable bill because let's look at the history, and a lot of us in the room have been here through for the last 8 years chugging away on this. The committee, the governor-appointed task force wanted this, recommended that this be reported by section township range. That's 640 acres, one square mile. That's how the rules were placed. That's how pesticide use is reported in California. Fast forward to 2005, there was a decision to have, for confidentiality reasons, to further protect confidentiality, reporting was to be by basin. These are 5,000 to 15,000 square miles in size. What we're proposing today is a far cry from the controversial square mile. What we're asking for is watersheds that are approximately 1,000 square miles in size. The Mackenzie, the Tualatin, Sandy Am. Still protects confidentiality, but makes a huge difference in protecting people's drinking water and helps public health researchers and others. Very quickly, -1 amendment also is going to ensure that the government data is reported specifically. It's what the decision had always been, to have government reporting be by specific address. Right now, you can't tell the difference between an application to a school and an application to a horse farm. We need to have specific information about what it's already public information. It should be reported specifically. Thank
you
so much.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Kafouri, do you have anything to add to that?
No.
All right. With that, committee, any questions?
Nope.
Can we take a motion, Mr. Chair?
Nope. We've got a couple more people to testify.
Sorry.
Terry Witt, thank you both very much. Barry Fuscio and Scott Ashcom.
No public hearing, are we?
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Chair Vakian and members of the committee, my name is Terry Witt, Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. I have testimony that's fairly long, but I will not read it. It's being passed out right now. I can summarize basically what our position is with regard to changing the reporting location pretty succinctly. Over the course of the last 7 years, the OFS and the agricultural community have offered to report by watershed location 5 times. Every time it has been offered, it has been rejected because the proponents, including NCAP, have said that we need to report by a smaller reporting unit, basically township range and section. Now, when the program has just begun, we've got 3 months' worth of data collected. All of a sudden, they change their mind and say, now we want to report by watershed, let's change the law. We put into effect when the bill was drafted, and I was the primary drafter of the amendments that were adopted to the bill back in 1999, House Bill 3602. We put a 2009 sunset date at the end of the year so that we would have the entire 2009 session to review the program, discuss its merits, its shortfalls, and if necessary, modify and extend the sunset if the program was a worthwhile entity. That was always our intent. We believe that it makes much more sense than to change the program, which would basically negate the data that has been submitted to date for 2007 and start the clock all over again based on the -1 amendment, start the clock all over again in 2008.
It makes much more sense to collect data in 2007, do it again in 2008, and do a thorough review of the program. At that point in time, look at whether the reporting locations are appropriate, and if not, make modifications at that time to the entire program. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ashcombe?
Scott Ashcombe with the Oregon Agricultural Alliance. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. We're opposed to 683 in the form that you have it before you. I just want to dramatize our objection to the fourth level hydrologic unit. I venture that if anybody in this room were asked what fourth level hydrologic unit that they live in, that they could not answer that question. In the last 3 years, the Department of Agriculture has conducted an intensive public education campaign to educate farmers on how to report their pesticide use to the Department of Agriculture in the PERS program by River Basin. We conducted a seminar. I believe we've had two seminars well attended by farmers to learn how to report properly. If we change a horse in the middle of the stream now, after 3 years of public education, educating the farmers of this state how to report by River Basin, and now ask them to report by fourth-tier hydrological unit, that quality of the data that ODA is going to collect is going to be virtually meaningless. And so we're opposed to this bill. Leave it like it is. It isn't broke. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Abaki, and I won't go into my past. I'm the president of the Oregon Farm Bureau, Farm to Gresham. Oregon Farm Bureau vehemently opposes Senate Bill 863. I was one of 18 members of the original PERS task force appointed by Governor Kitzhaber. It was a very diverse and balanced committee with representation from all players. The agricultural industry supported the implementation of the current PERS program. It was not without its controversy and political battles, but in the end it was a bipartisan bill that created a framework for the current system. Location was a critical component to the agricultural industry because it was the key to the confidentiality provisions in House Bill 3602. This piece was traded and negotiated over time until finally, in last session, the very legislature that you folks represent set this location in statute. They then funded the current program and implemented it in January 1st of this year. Ironically, if the environmental community had supported Watershed initially, this system would now have generated 4 years' worth of data. We are only 4 months into a working, functioning system that has been funded and created to gather data based on water basins around the state. I am frankly at a loss to understand why the state would want to change a program before it is even given the chance to provide 1 year's worth of data. The enabling legislation for this bill sunsets in 2009, only 2 years away. Let's be realistic and give this program a chance to work. The program as is requires a lot of work and input by growers and others in the user community. While Farm Bureau has fully supported PERS, that is not to say that all farmers fully trust the confidentiality of the system or the motives of some activist groups who want to take away our crop protection products. This is notwithstanding of all the work and money involved in the last 4 months of reporting by Basin. To pass a bill that would force farmers to go back and redo 4 months of reporting would only verify their suspicions. Let's let the system work as it is, generate the data, and look at it again in 2009 if necessary. I strongly urge you to vote no on this egregious bill.
Do me a favor and just go ahead and give us your name for the end of the record there.
Barry Bashu.
Thank you, Mr. Bashu. Committee, any questions? All right. Thank you very much. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 683. Just so the committee knows, when we start making the motions here, this is a bill that is going to have a referral to the Ways and Means Committee, but we've got some dash ones before us. Senator Pozanski?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash ones in Senate Bill 683.
Senator Pozanski moves the dash ones to 683. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash ones are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 683 as amended by the dash ones to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Pozanski moves Senate Bill 683 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer.
I will be opposed to the motion with or without. Appreciate it doesn't have a recommendation, but even with that, I will be opposed to the motion. I think this bill should lay right here comfortably in this committee and rest a peaceful rest for the next remaining of the session for all the reasons that were just stated by the last three witnesses.
Thank you, Senator Beyer.
Mr. Chair, Senator will not be supporting us after all the blood that's been shed on this issue for about three sessions. I thought we handled it last session, and in the parlance of this morning's committee, I think this bill should rest comfortably in an EFU-zoned resting area.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson. Committee, any objections?
Yes.
Senator Beyer noted. Senator Atkinson noted. The motion carries, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 683, and we will open a... Do we have a public hearing on this? We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1044. Is she going to come? Does she need to come back up?
Yeah.
All right, Ms. Farmington, come on up.
She explained the dash, whatever it was, and off we go. Dash one.
Just dash one zone.
You don't need to go through it again, so we just heard it this morning. Welcome back.
Hey.
You were just here this morning. Do you want to talk about the amendment?
Yes. Linda Swearingen, for the record, this amendment is what has been asked by the governor's office and DLCD, and it does exactly what we intended for it to do, was to dash out, for the time being now, the southern Oregon counties. And so all it will do is address the Scrivener's fix.
Very good. Committee, any questions?
I want to ask a question. I'm not sure I heard quite what you said. This eliminates Curry, Douglas, and Jackson County?
Yes. At the request of the governor's staff, we have eliminated Curry, Douglas, and Jackson County from receiving the same benefits of eastern Oregon. And we're going to meet with the governor's staff to try to encourage them to support this over at the House. But in an effort to bring the governor on board, we've agreed to drop the language for right now.
All right.
We certainly would like it, but...
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer.
I apologize. I wasn't here for this morning's meeting. I would have much rather been here. I was sitting in a dentist chair.
Oh.
Yeah, so I might be a little cranky today. My teeth still hurt.
You need us to give a quick review of the bill?
No, I'm just curious to know what's left.
Well, what's left is, as you know, in the 2003 session, we had Senate Bill 911, which was a negotiated bill between the Senate, House, and the governor's staff and the governor himself. But what ended up happening is we had a Scrivener's error in the bill. And what ended up happening is the 2.5-to-1 ratio only applied to the first 50 units. And it was supposed to apply to the entire resort. The bill as proposed would allow Jackson, Douglas, Curry, and Josephine County the same benefits as Eastern Oregon, which is really what we would like to see happen. However, we received an email from Lane Shetterly saying, well, we just haven't studied this yet for Southern Oregon, and we're not sure that we want to support it. We will, however, support the Scrivener's error.
Okay.
In lieu of that, well, in spite of that, we're planning on meeting with the governor's staff. The Jackson County commissioners are still pursuing this and hoping that we can bring the governor up to speed in the House.
Thank you.
And then it back.
Any further questions? All right. Thanks for coming up again. We appreciate that. With that, I will close the public hearing, Senate Bill 1044, and open a work session on Senate Bill 1044.
Mr. Chair, can I move? Boy, you haven't. Did you work session?
Yeah, we're in work session.
We're in work session.
Do the dash
ones. Senator Atkinson, why don't you move the dash ones?
Dash ones, I move to be amended into Senate Bill 1044.
Thank you. Senator Atkinson moves the dash one amendments into Senate Bill 1044. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I don't want to stop this bill from being amended and going through, but I'm going to vote no on the amendments because my county and Southern Oregon needs this change, and I think we have an opportunity to make that change in the House. I'm going to put a no vote on it only to show that we want that looked at very carefully.
Very good. Any objections? Senator Bates noted. With that, the dash ones are adopted. Motion on the bill, please.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1044 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson moves Senate Bill 1044 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing no objections, the motion carries. Senator Atkinson will carry the bill. And with that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 1044 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 98. Jim Paul, if you could come up. Sue, why don't you give us an update on the bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 98 allows the state forester to acquire property for the establishment of working force, directs the state forester to manage the property acquired for long-term revenue to provide student assistance to persons attending institutions in the Oregon University system. It allows the state treasurer to issue working force revenue bonds, establish a working force higher education fund, and establish a working force revenue bond fund. It continuously appropriates money to each of these departments. There is a dash 2 and a dash 3, and I believe the proponents of each of the amendments will speak to them today.
I don't have anybody on my sign-up sheet to testify, so before we move on, is anybody, Mr. Moskowitz? Anybody else? All right, Mr. Paul, go ahead.
There's one more back in the corner.
I'm sorry. Oh, Mr. Klug, come on up. Mr. Paul, you're first.
Thank you, Chair Vakian, members of the committee. I'm Jim Paul, Assistant State Forester with the Department of Forestry. I have some lengthy written comments going around, and each time I will keep my comments brief. This bill would provide a new authority for the Board of Forestry to acquire and manage working forests to generate revenue for higher education scholarships in the state of Oregon. A second and equally as important goal of this new authority would be to also provide an important tool to the department to address the impact of the fragmentation and development of Oregon's forests. It's becoming an increasingly challenging issue for the Department of Forestry and the state of Oregon. To give you a picture of the magnitude of this problem, it's estimated that we are losing about 1 million acres of private forest lands a year in the United States to development. That's deforestation that's currently projected to occur. Given Oregon's population rate being higher than the national average, we do anticipate Oregon seeing a disproportionate amount of this 1 million acres being lost per year. So keeping forest lands in forest land is an important goal of this bill. Important to the people of Oregon for a number of reasons, including providing an economic base in rural areas, source of recreation, fish and wildlife habitat, and high water quality that will benefit all Oregonians. I thank you for your time. Consideration, be pleased to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Paul. I'd like you to stay at the table so you can discuss the amendments that are presented as well. Mr. Moskowitz.
Thank you, Chair Vakian and members of the committee. My name is David Moskowitz, here today on behalf of Trout Unlimited and the Wild Salmon Center. And we worked on amendments to this bill. We testified earlier when this bill first came up. We're in support of the concept of this bill. It's a very important tool for the state. However, we would like to see some amendments that strengthen the management regime for these lands. If they're going to be state lands, they should be managed at a high level and while producing a balanced array of benefits for the state. And I'd just like to draw your attention to, and this is in the dash 3 amendments, to section 3 on page 2 that has a different definition of working forest that we believe is a little broader. In section,
hang on just a second. Hang on, do you have copies of the amendment?
I have dash 3.
I do.
Okay. Go ahead.
So there's a definition of working forest that is slightly different than the dash 2s. In section 4, sub 3, we suggest a standard for these lands. Under the current proposal, the lands we manage under the State Forest Practices Act, we believe that as these lands become state forest lands, even though they're working forests, they're slightly different, we think they should be managed at a higher degree to protect public resources such as clean water, clean air, fish, and wildlife. Those are also very important forest products coming from Oregon's forest lands, and the state already manages its lands at a higher level. We'd like to suggest that. And finally, on page 4 in section 6, in the This is in the priority setting for acquisition, starting at subsection 3 at line 13. We have suggested a different order of priority than is in the current amendments, to really focus on the privately held lands. The area that is of most concern to some of the conservation community is sub D, the federal lands. We understand some of the reasons behind including federal lands in this bill, but we think that the priority should be on the private lands, so we just suggest a different order. Those are the main reasons for the amendments we submitted. We appreciate the consideration of these, and thank you for the time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Kloof, before we go to you, Mr. Paul, I'd like your responses to the Dash 3 amendments, if you have any.
Chair Vaki, members of the committee, I just learned of the Dash 3 amendments not a few moments before the hearing. I have had a chance to look at them. I guess at this point, our preference obviously is the Dash 2. However, if in the interest of moving the bill forward, we would not be an objection to the Dash 3 amendments.
Okay. Mr. Kloof?
Chair Vaki, committee, for the record, Bill Flutting, Carpenters, Industrial Workers. I think the term is correct, a working force, and I feel, my members feel, that that's what we should keep it as, a working force. When I say working, I mean industrial workers. Let the Department of Forestry use the same guidelines they use now. Sustainable yield. If we're ever going to bring this state out of its economic slump and put people back to work, these Dash 3s and things is just another forest tie-up. And I'm here to state on the record that we are against it. And I urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Committee, do you have any questions? We're going to stand at ease just because I want to get at least one of my other committee members here before we move to a work session.
But we're done with the three of you.
Session on Senate Bill 98. Let me explain the intention of what we're going to do here. We're going to take a vote in just a minute. I think there hasn't been enough time for the Dash 3s to be considered by the agency yet, or the legislators yet. There might be some good stuff in there. There might not, but I think they need more time. The Dash 2s, I think, have that same potential as well. So it's going to be the intent of the chair to move this bill. It has to go to revenue, and then it has another subsequent referral to Ways and Means, both. So I think we're going to have a motion to move the bill, not amended, to revenue and give the parties a chance to go down to revenue and argue your amendments there. So with that, Senator Pozanski, if I could have any discussion.
I'll wait till the motion, Mr. Chair.
Senator Pozanski, could you give me a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 98 to the Revenue Committee of the Senate.
Thank you. Senator Pozanski moves Senate Bill 98 to the Revenue Committee. Now, Senator Beyer, any discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am opposed to this bill in any way, shape, or form. Oregon is already predominantly owned by government. We don't need more of Oregon being owned by government. I know the department seems to be concerned about the term working forest, but I would argue that most private lands in Oregon are more productive than any government lands in Oregon when it comes to a working forest. They are concerned, and I testified in the first hearing, about the large block forest in eastern Oregon being converted into some other use.
small woodland owners, many of which don't ever get a 40 or 160 acre block. And I think it'd be a 160 acre block by current zoning that the large block forest that they are concerned about being converted, the smallest they could be divided into is 160 acre parcels. Those are working forests, even with a home on them. Those are still working forests. I personally, on my farm, I own, I think, one block that is actually larger than 160 acres. Everything else we have is smaller than that. They are very productive forests. I just think that this bill is the wrong idea, and if the state of Oregon wants to invest in college funds, they should take the money they put here and put it into the stock market. They would do a lot better for college students by investing in the stock market because, for example, the Elliott Forest makes approximately 0.5% return on investment. A blind monkey can do better than that in the stock market. I'm opposed, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, my vote of the courtesy to keep thing moving and to refer to the leadership of the chair to get us concluded at a very reasonable aggressive hour.
Yes, well, do that better than a blind monkey, but not by much, I suppose.
Ouch.
I think I might actually try the stock market now.
All right. The motion is to move Senate Bill 98 to the Revenue Committee. Objections?
Yes.
Senator Beyer objects. Courtesy vote from Senator Atkinson and the motion carries. And with that, I will close the work session. Senate Bill 98 Committee, thank you very much for your preparation today.
Thank you
and your attention during the hearing. We are adjourned.
Sure. It is a good